Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and children of all ages, you're now tuned into the Investor Show. As always, this is your gracious host, the Prince of Investing, Prince Dice, coming to you guys and girls live all the way from the beautiful city and state of Denver, Colorado. We got a very special episode. We're going to be talking about Chesapeake Energy filing for bankruptcy and the three, more like five lessons you're going to learn from this particular episode. And I think you guys are going to enjoy it because you can learn more from somebody's success. You can learn more from somebody's failure than their success. Well, first, let's jump straight into it. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Thank you for tuning in to the Investor Show. As always, this is your gracious host, the Prince of Investing, Prince Dice, come all the way live from a beautiful city and state in Denver, Colorado. Now, as you can see in the description box, we're going to be talking about Chesapeake Energy filing for bankruptcy and the lessons that it teaches investors. Ladies and gentlemen, I first of all wanted to do this because I got great response from the video that I did about Facebook, the lesson that you learned from Facebook. But today, you know, just a day after, as soon as I published that, you know, boom, here come Chesapeake Energy filing for bankruptcy. The reason why this one touches near and dear, because somebody had wrote me and said, Prince, I'm looking at investing into Chesapeake Energy. Can you keep an eye on it? So I was keeping an eye on it, looking at it, following the company. I've never been too funny of energy and oil just because of oil. Oil is too unstable. Oil is way out there. I've never been a fan of it. But when I see companies that file for bankruptcy, there are great lessons you can learn, because the great lessons that you can learn you can learn more from people's failures than their success. Now, when you're looking through those financial reports, you're always asking yourself, what do I look for? What am I looking for? Whatever the case may be. But when you see companies fall, you start to pick up why. Why did Facebook go through what it's going through right now? Because it only 99% to 98% of his revenue came from one source, and that was advertising. Everybody's putting his advertising band on. Here come Facebook going to tumble. Look at Google, YouTube. If they start to put a band on YouTube, Google got so many other ways it makes money. Facebook, 98-99% of his money comes from ad revenue. So that taught investors, pay attention to the ad revenue. Now, what are the lessons you can learn from Chesapeake? So the next time you read a financial report, you're going to start looking at the streams of revenue. Now, what are the lessons we can pull up from Chesapeake Energy? So we're going to take a look at it. The first thing is, ladies and gentlemen, size in the industry. What is the size of Chesapeake Energy in its industry, right? What does that mean? What does that have to do with anything? This is why it's important. You guys and girls have heard me say this all the time. When I look at a sector, I always look at the top one, two, or three. And if I get a new company, I automatically want to compare you to the top one, two, or three. People came to me and said, hey, you know what? Gap has signed a deal with Kanye West and is doing, you know, the stock ran up, I don't know, 9-10%, which always happens. The same story we saw with Weight Watchers. I automatically look at that company and I look at who's in that sector and who's in that sector and who's comparing to that particular sector, right? Why is that so important? Because when the times get rough and the times get tough, it's the financial sheets that's going to get people through hard times. Ladies and gentlemen, look at the airline industry. There will be an airline company that will file for bankruptcy. Who do you think is going to be? The guy at the top or the person at the bottom? Look at your job, from all the way from the CEO all the way down to the person that cleans the parking lot at a company. If that company went under or something happened bad to that company, who do you think is going to struggle the most? It's going to be the person in the middle, at the person at the bottom who's outside sweeping the parking lot. So when I stack your company up according to market capitalization, when you look at Chesapeake today, of course, the stock has failed dramatically in the last couple of days, but it's set around $9 million or something like that. So it was at like position number 28 out of this industry. I think at the top was ExxonMobil, Chevron, all these other big company, $100 billion market cap companies. They sit at the top of the company. So automatically, when things get rough, the companies that are at the bottom who are barely stringing along, those small airlines are the ones who are going to go first. And we know oil has been getting beat up the last couple of years. And anybody that really follows me knows that I'm not a big fan of oil because I think the world is moving away from oil. Every new technology that comes out, everybody is moving away from oil and doing less and less on oil. So when I look at the size of the industry, Chesapeake Energy did not match up compared to its industry. And that makes me weary because when times get rough, the little guys are the first ones to go. At the top of the industry is Delta airline industry. You got Delta, Southwest. The top of shoe companies, you got Nike and Fila, whoever else. So somebody asked me, Prince, do you think Nike will go under? Well, it can. Anything can happen in this world. We know hard times will come, but it's the little guys who will go first, right? So when I look at a sector and I look at an industry and I look at it, if something happened to the shoe world, who would go first? Right? Look at Facebook and Twitter. Everybody is pulling back their revenue stream. Everybody's pulling back ads. But guess who you think is going to last through this the longest? Facebook or Twitter? It's probably going to be Facebook, just due to your size in the industry. Chesapeake had a very low size in the industry compared to the 20 other companies that was bigger than it in his industry. That's lesson number one. Lesson number two, look at the financial report, which we're going to pull up right now, ladies and gentlemen. Let me pull this up on my screen here. This is the 10K report. This is the 10K report of, Chesapeake last year, right? The 10K is the annual financial reports. So right here, when you looked at their current assets, you look at their cash, very little cash, $4 million, $6 million for a huge company. Also, when you stroll on down and you look at their long-term debt, wow, look at the debt compared to the cash. So they have very little cash on the books, but I noticed this industry is just like that in general, but a very little cash on the books and the debt. Now, a rule of thumb is you want to be able to look at a company's annual cash multiplied times 2 or 3, and that should be the maximum amount of their debt, right? You know, that's what some rules of thumbs that people put out there, right? You're looking at $1 billion, right? Because these numbers are in millions. So right up here is $6 million. So down here, you're talking about they're moving on to a holding a column of $1 billion just sitting in long-term debt that the company may have. So hopefully I'm not misinterpreting that, but that's what I'm interpreting from it, right? So you're looking at a company that has little cash but a lot of debt. So as soon as hard times come, if you put it in real life, that's like someone, I have $100,000 worth of credit card debt, and I only have, $1,000 in my bank account. I can make it as long as the money is coming into the company, as long as everything is going fine. But as soon as something like a COVID-19, something erratic happened in the oil prices, I'm going to be the first to tumble. So you're looking at, some people call this is the debt-to-equity ratio. Look at the debt-to-equity ratio. Look at the cash-to-debt ratio. This is when it's important. Some people always ask, what do I look at financial reports? This is another problem you're looking at. A massive amount of debt with a little amount of cash. It's all fine and dandy until a hard time hits. When a hard time hit, that's when everything's going to go. Let's take a school teacher. Let's take me. I have a good job, but I have a $100,000 credit card, and I only have $1,000 in the bank. It's all fine as long as money's keep going into the economy, at least as long as money coming to me, right? But as soon as something happens with my job, I'm in a hard trouble. I'm in some big-time debt. And you know, we're getting to the bankruptcy and stuff like that. But that's number two, looking at all the cash they have on hand and, you know, looking at the little bit of cash they have on hand compared to the debt, right? Number three, I kind of put in here cash, but that kind of goes back into what I was saying. Cash is so important when you're looking at a company because that lets me know if times get hard. How can I stop sharing my screen here? When times get hard, I look at cash. This is why you're looking at how much money is on hand. You're looking at current assets. Current assets are assets that can be converted to cash within 12 months or less, i.e. a savings account, a checking account, T-bills, or maybe a 9-month CD or something like that, right? That's why that is so important, because when times get hard, how much of that money can you go to cash and take care of a situation? When your money is tied up into long-term and stuff like that, this is why cash is very important. So a company that's walking around with a little bit of cash and a lot of debt, that is, it's a ticking time bomb for something like when the airline industries got hit, when these industries get hit by something massive like we didn't see. And ladies and gentlemen, guess what? It's going to happen again. If it's not COVID-19, it'll be something else. And 2008 was the financial crisis, the mortgages, 2000.com bomb. And you study the history of market crashes, it always comes out of the blue and just hits everybody upside the head. Everybody walked into 2020 like, "Ooh, it's going to be my year, whatever." And look at it. We're halfway through winter, summertime. Don't even know what's going to be happening by the fall. That's crazy. So number four, the industry was unstable. An unstable industry, oil prices. You have a company, you have an organization over there called OPEC, where all the world's leading oil producers get together and they, you know, prices are controlled with supply and demand, right? Demand stays the same, supply goes up, prices drop. Basic economics course, right? But here we go. So what they do is the largest producers of oil, they get together in the Middle East and they decide how much oil is going to be pumped. Oh, we're going to pump this many barrels. But guess what always happens with oil? Somebody in Saudi Arabia gets mad at somebody in Iran. Somebody in Iran gets in a dispute with somebody in Russia. Somebody in Russia gets in a dispute. And everybody know historically the Middle East is always unstable when it comes down to politics. So when somebody get mad at somebody else, they pump a bunch of barrels of oil. And when they pump a bunch of barrels of oil, that shoots up the supply. When that shoots up the supply and the demand is staying the same, that shoots down prices of stocks. Not stocks, but oil prices. So, hey, I'm mad at Russia. Oh, okay, I got something for you. I'm going to go in my backyard and I'm going to pump a bunch of oil. That type of craziness has been going on for years. Ever since I've been following oil, I really got into oil back in 2006, 2007, when oil prices ran through the roof. And when they ran through the roof, I was just like, man, everybody lives off of oil. But guess what? You're seeing the surges of hybrid cars. You're seeing the surges of electric cars, right? Cars that run off of gas. Everything America has been doing has been trying to become less and less dependent upon oil. So when I saw that, then I saw the unstableness of the market. One day the Saudi prince gets mad at somebody in Iran, and Iran is mad at somebody in Syria, and Syria got this connection with Russia, and it's just too much mess. It's too unstable. That's why I'm not crazy about energy, because energy has oil tied into it. And with me, I know my circle of competence and my level of competency. I say, well, you know what, man? You know, I could wake up one day over the weekend and somebody can get fighting overseas about oil. Oil prices could run up. Somebody can get mad about oil prices. They can go down. I'd just rather stay away from it. So the industry is very unstable, right? It's not that much stability in the oil industry itself, right? So now when we look at the world, let's go to the next step. Here's a big one. Number five. Let's go to number five. Number five, unprofitable. When you're looking at Chesapeake Energy was unprofitable. Ladies and gentlemen, let's pull it up on the financial sheets. Here we go. This is why you have to learn how to read or seek out to read financial reports. So let's go to the financial reports are made of three statements: income statement, balance sheet, and cash flow. So when you're looking at a company's how much money they're bringing in, how much money is going out, yes, that's kind of cash flow, but we're going to look at the income statement. So let's go right here. Right? See, can I find it? I'll give me 1 second. Right. So right here, it's telling you this is 2019. Now, this is not something I'm making up. This is coming from the SEC.org. In the last 12 months, ending in December 31st, 2019, they lost 100. They netted a loss of $306 million. This is coming from the income statement. So they was losing money in 2019. Last year, they were already losing money. Unprofitable companies. Remember when I always tell you guys and girls, is that company profitable? If it's not profitable, why? Why is its competitors profitable and it's not profitable? I always talked about profitability. Now you're seeing why. Because if a company was already losing, when something like this comes along, it just takes them out of their misery. Now let's go back to, let's see here. All right, look at their revenues. You're looking at their revenues, what, $8.9 billion that came in. They had, you know, nice revenues or whatnot or whatever the case may be. But when you look at how much money that was going out, after they paid everything, after they paid all their operations, You can see right here, they're netting a loss. So the company was unprofitable. The company was already losing money, ladies and gentlemen. And this is as of December of, what you call it? This was a December of last year. They lost $300 million, right? So when something like this, when oil prices become unstable, we had something like COVID-19, a pandemic hit, it's no shocker that you're not going to be able to make it through hard times, right? It's the same thing with Uber. Uber right now is trying to find its footing. Uber is trying to find its footing, but something like this could knock it off its roster. That's why it's so important. Why I always look at a company's profitability. If you're not profitable in your space, I want to know, well, if Chesapeake is not profitable, well, why is Chevron profitable? Why is ExxonMobil profitable and this company is not profitable? Maybe they have some type of durable competitive advantage. So it's the same thing, like when you look at the rideshare space, when you got Uber and Lyft and all these other people, none of them are profitable right now. But if Lyft was profitable and Uber was unprofitable, I would look at Uber totally different. I would say, whoa, well, why are your competitors profitable, but you're not profitable? But in this energy space, people are profitable, but Chesapeake Energy in 2019 lost $300 million. So this is why it's important of a company being profitable. Because if you're not making money already, what do you think is going to happen in the future, right? Evan, what's going on, my man? Evan, what's going on? Hey, how you doing, Jennifer? So now let's go over with the lessons that we learned. Let's do a recap. Let's go over the lessons we learned. First of all, size in the industry. When you looked at the whole entire sector energy, energy sector, you automatically saw that Chesapeake Energy was not at the top. It was not number one, number two, number three. It was a small company. And when things get rough, the small companies are the first to go. Let's look at e-commerce. The top people in the game is Amazon, all the way down to whoever. We're talking about publicly traded companies. If something was to disrupt the e-commerce business, guess who's going to go out first? It's going to be the little guys. The same thing with the airline industry. So the size in the industry was a big thing I looked at. The second part, very low cash. We just looked at the financial report. Low cash, high debt. Low cash, high debt. If you have a little bit of cash, but you have a bunch of debt, everything is fine as long as you got your job. But as soon as that paycheck gets disrupted, you're going to see smoke in the city, right? Number three. It kind of reiterated what I was saying, but it was talking about why I look into cash. Cash, 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 cash. Cash and current assets tells me if things got rough, I'm giving a sip of water real quick. That's the show mug. Make sure y'all grab y'all's. But anyway, cash tells me if times got hard, how fast can you jump to cash? And let's get another reiteration on cash. This is coming directly from Chesapeake itself. This is their press release, right? They are telling you right here. They put this out on the 28th, which I think was today or yesterday. Yesterday? Yeah, yesterday put this out. So they sit back and they telling everybody, hey, look, this is what we got to do. Chesapeake Energy, they filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Chapter 11 meaning they're looking to reorganize their debt, aka the same thing that, what's their name? Hertz. Hertz, I think they did 11 as well. So they're looking to reorganize their debt. They're looking to, so they're telling you right here, you can read it coming straight from the company. Chapter 11 bankruptcy court in Texas to facilitate its balance sheet. They're looking to reconstruct to intent to use the proceeds and strengthen the balance sheets to reconstruct the legacy, blah, blah, blah. Pretty much they're using this, they're trying to reorganize their debt in order to, what you call it. So they're telling you right now that if you go down here a little bit more, they have $2.5 billion in existing financing, right? Considering $1.7 billion, they break down more of their loans and the debt that they have outstanding. So they're looking to file Chapter 11. They're trying to reorganize their debt, pay people back at different times. They're not trying to just disappear with the company. They're just trying to reorganize their debt because they can't afford to pay people back on time like they're supposed to. So they're pretty much asking for leniency to be able to reorganize. This can go bad if the creditors say, no, we're not going to reorganize. We want our money now. They start to call away their money. Then guess what? Then you can go into worse problems. They may go into Chapter 7 where they may just try to disband all of their debt. So this is telling you exactly what they're doing. They're filing for Chapter 11 in a plan to reorganize and eliminate $7 billion of debt. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to eliminate $7 billion of debt. This is why it's so important when I told you cash value according to debt. The next thing, very unstable industry. You can wake up one day, oil could be doing good, oil could be doing bad. You know, just depending on the Middle East and the largest oil producers in the OPEC. Hopefully I'm OPEC, whatever, right? That organization, however they decide to create the demand of oil, right? Number five, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? The company was already not profitable. Last year, they was already losing money, even though oil had a rough year in the last couple of years, but they were already losing money. So they was already losing money. They had a high amount of debt, a low amount of cash. They were small in their industry in a very unstable industry. Those are the five lessons that I took away from Chesapeake Energy and filing for their bankruptcy. So the next time I'm looking at a new company, let's say today I go to look at Gap, I'm looking at how much debt, how much cash, how big are they in their industry? Is the industry stable? Is it unstable? Are they profitable? You guys and girls see how this could be guidelines to what you do next. The only difference, I'm 35 years old. My son is 9 years old. The greatest difference between him and I is that I have 27 years, and hopefully my math ain't incorrect, 26, 27 years of life experience more than he does, right? So you have to use that when you're going through life as an investor, as you're learning different companies and you're reading finances, and you're reading the 10K, you're reading the 10Qs, and you're following companies. It starts to teach you life lessons about what not to look or what to look for in another relationship. You go through relationships in life. You learn good relationships and bad relationships. And you notice the red flags. And you saw the red flags in that relationship, but you ignored them. But the next time you see those red flags, you're going to start to proceed with precaution. All right? Well, ladies and gentlemen, somebody said something here. But ladies and gentlemen, I definitely thank you guys for tuning in. Somebody said it's truths. Yes. So I hope y'all learned something from this, took something from this, put this in your pipe, and you know, smoke it for the next time you are looking at another company. Because so many people ask me all the time, Prince, I'm reading financial reports. I don't know what I'm looking at. What is good or what is bad? This is how you learn. You learn from Facebook. Oh, revenue streams are important because I learned that from Facebook. Oh, Chesapeake Energy, I learned with debt and low cash, size in the industry, all of the good things, right? This is how you build your tripwires. Some people like to call it military people out there who all know. This is how you set up your tripwires because you are experienced, right? You're experienced. You saw this happen before. You learn more from people's failures than their success. You learn more from people's failures than their success. I know that's true in the game of life. So take these upon yourself and apply these to the companies that you're looking at today. If you don't know how to read financial reports, I suggest you start to learn how to read them. And now you kind of know what to build yourself around and what to look for. All right? Ladies and gentlemen, into the next video podcast. Evan, you're 100% right. Building your knowledge base. You're building your knowledge base. You're knowing. Shout out to Evan, you know. You're building your knowledge base. He's 100% right. Building your knowledge base of knowing, hey, why is cash important? Why total assets are important? Why is market capitalization important? Why is total debt important? Why is cash flow important, right? Why is my size and my sector important? Because when things get hard, the small guys are going to go first, all right? Ladies and gentlemen, I hope y'all enjoyed this episode. And until the next video, podcast, cartoon, or whatever else crazy y'all see me do around the globe, y'all already know. One second. Y'all already know my name is Prince Dykes. This is the Investor Show. Peace. Be safe. I'm out. Thank you.